This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 435, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 435. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us, they select the best one they read. We call it the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book on the show. We talk about other books of the week. We talk about all kinds of fun stuff, goofy nonsense. Sometimes Paul is racist.
No, I'm not.
We move past that.
I feel like we should do this. Let's just do this on the show.
Okay. Paul,
a lot of people don't want to talk about it, but your racism has become a problem.
Big problem.
Big problem. You know, maybe this isn't the best time to do it. I'm going to go ahead and take it back.
After the show. I'm going to show you the file letters of the NAACP.
I feel like that was racist.
Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning.
Oh, I went to a liberal arts school. Everything makes me feel guilty.
Paul, did you just drop out of the show? Are you still
no, listening? I'm here. I'm just...
Okay. Ready to talk? I get you. This is a review show.
Good move.
So we'll be talking about the things that happened in this week's books. And so if you didn't read them, you'll be spoiled. So don't do that. Pause the show or read the books. One of the two. Either option. Or don't care. That's a third option. It's always a good one. Come back when the coast is clear if you do more are worried about that. This week, Paul, you had the pick.
Because I care about the plight of the mer people, I chose The Wake, number 8.
The Merple.
Yeah, I read a bunch of books this week, and this was an odd week. There were a lot of like solid fours and everything, and it just took me, and I was like, where is the pick? Where is it? And the last
book
that I read ended up being the pick, and that was The Wake, number 8 by Scott Snyder, Sean Murphy, and Matt Hollingsworth on the colors, the beautiful, beautiful watercolors, great yellow skies and everything. And this just continues to be a really imaginative high seas adventure. There's a pirate in here named Captain Mary, and he's got like a hand that he can remove, and he can put a gun in its place, and they're going around in a giant mer person submarine thing that can swallow up Leeward, our main character, and her dolphin friend. That was where we left off last issue. She had just escaped from like a prison barge. And it was in a section of sea filled with mer people, and she got swallowed up. And there's this Captain Nemo kind of dude in there, and his band of miscreants, and they go off and they go to their secret sort of port where all of these mutant pirate people, mer fuckers as I believe they're called, hang out. And she is trying to find the source of this signal. There's this mythical signal. And we know, since we read the first 5 issues, that it has something to do with this Lee Archer character, the protagonist from the first half of this 10-issue series.
If she'd only read those issues.
But this is 200 years later.
Problem. Yeah. They probably didn't survive the flood.
Yeah.
That's exactly the problem.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. It's just, it's pretty great. I love talking about what
it's... There's a great sense of adventure in this book. Especially this issue with the pirates, who were lots of fun. I don't know how this story's going to wrap up in 2 issues.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know, but it's fun no matter what. I like that there's these crazy pirates with half mechanical bodies, and then there's the guy still chasing her, and he's got a giant like glider thing with missiles and
General Marlowe.
And then I like the fact that the people from the first part of the story are all sort of these myths. In fact, some of their names pop up.
Basically, the last time we talked about this series when it was a pick of the week, I think, we weren't sure whether that recording, that signal that they were getting was, somehow from now, like that Lee Archer was still alive, or whether it was there. They talk about in this issue about there apparently being a lot of signals that are like messages in bottles. Right. Like they keep picking up these lost radio signals, sort of like Lost. Like there are these lost signals, and what's going on with that, and when are they actually from? But apparently there's this prophecy sort of that there is the signal, and it's going to help them out of this situation where, you know, the world is just covered in water.
Well, I feel like issue 10 is going to end with Kevin Costner showing up to save the day. I feel like that's really the only way it can end.
I mean, that is a way to pitch this book. It is like, you know, Waterworld, but good.
Right.
Because I think this is just filled with fascinating mythology, and that there was a cartoon when I was younger called The Pirates of Dark Water, which I don't think is remembered super well.
I remember it.
Like, people don't love it as much, but I remember at that time this was just a great combination of pirates and fantasy, and here there's more science fiction, but it's just a really interesting sort of confluence of ideas. They're throwing everything at the wall, and a lot of it is sticking.
I like that Sean Murphy gets to go nuts with these mer creatures. You know, there wasn't a giant one in this one, but I like whenever his giant ones show up.
The giant one took the boat down.
That's true. You're right. I'm trying to scroll through this, but
they're in this one. They're in the ship that's in the shape of a giant mer person, and it actually ends up in a fight with a giant squid, just like
right.
Just like the Jules Verne. So
it's great. He gets to draw the kind of things you don't normally see in comics. You know, these giant squid battling a giant mer creature. You'd think you would see that kind of thing more often, but you don't really. It's a gorgeous looking book.
I love
That's what's wrong with comics today.
Right.
I love more Captain Mary, that old visual, and just the way he speaks. He, you know, tosses Fathom in there, and whenever they curse, I guess there's like little
fish.
Like puffer fish or like fish skeleton iconography in there. That's kind of fun, and I don't think they take it too far.
No,
it's fun with language and what language would be like if 200 years from now the world is covered in ocean and, you know, they don't have their access to education. And
I feel like my life would be much simpler and also more complex if I could strap a giant machine gun to my hand like that with the barrel on the bottom. I feel like I'd get a lot more done throughout the day.
It's
for a little while until the police showed up. And then
it's just fun. That's just
yeah.
I think they have a giant airship called the Alamo. And
you know what this is? This is a side of Scott Snyder we haven't really gotten all that much.
That's basically what I was thinking the whole time.
Up until this point, in that he's a horror writer, and at his heart he loves horror, and he does it very well. And even Batman is a superhero book that's a little bit horror sometimes. But this is sort of, I don't want to say it's goofy because it's not. I don't want to say it's wacky because it's not. I don't want to say it's funny.
Playful.
Although it is funny, but it is a more playful and adventurous sort of story than that Scott Snyder's done, at least that I've read. There's been a bit of American Vampire like that, but American Vampire always comes back to horror. This is a different tone, which I like a lot.
Yeah, and you know, even comparing this issue to like the first five issues, it's totally different tonally. Although it feels like it's, you know, everything is tying in. We're seeing Lee Archer and everything. It's not jarring. It's just exciting and unpredictable in a fun way.
Right. I don't know. I'm sad. There's only two issues left, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a great book.
Like there's the Wake 2 or something.
Keep the Awakening.
The Awakening, yeah. I mean, there's like the, and you know, Captain Mary's got like a drone robot parrot on his shoulder that flies around and it picks
up. It's fun.
Readings. It's fun. It's
a lot of fun.
Very entertaining.
Josh, do you enjoy it?
I did. I actually noticed that I opened up the app and I realized that I hadn't read the issue before this because it came out during the dark times.
Right.
And so I read the two right in a row. And I did. I really enjoyed it. And it was one of those things where I was just struggling to find time to fit in my comics. And I started off, those are the first two things I read, and it set this really nice, I was like, these are good comics. It was a good way to get started with everything. And so when I saw that was the pick, I was pleased.
Good.
And I really did enjoy it. And I think
because you're stuck with it.
I think that
this is the history books.
Is this a race thing, Paul?
No, it's
I really did. I really think that Connor hit a nail on the head with the point that it really is a different thing from Scott, who really, he does that dark, creepy, that scary thing really well.
And there is creepy in here.
No, there totally is. There is, but it wasn't in the same way, though. I mean, right. Like, I think of a lot of the stuff. If I were to describe to you the feeling of a Scott Snyder comic book, it's like being in a dark room by yourself, thinking you were safe, and then you all of a sudden find out you were not because you see teeth in front of you or something, and it's all you see. It's all dark.
Well, I didn't need to sleep tonight. Thanks, Josh.
Well, this is a big world that has been built, and a language and a group of people, and it's in the much the same way that, say, Private Eye is an extension of the world we have if A, B, C, D, and E happen, you know?
Yeah.
And this is that, and it's in the same – well, like American Vampire has world building, but that's almost like, what if we just insert vampires in everything that already existed, whereas this is a take it to a logical conclusion. It just has a different tone to it, and it's a lot of fun, and obviously – him and Murphy work extremely well together. Yep. Murphy, a recent victim of a mountain bike crash where he broke his clavicle. So we'll see how that works.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Well, this week in the first issue of Miles Morales : The Ultimate Spider-Man #1, Peter Parker's floppy hair finally makes sense to me.
How so?
Why can't we do it?
For years, we said there were spoilers. For years, we had Ultimate Spider-Man Peter Parker, and everyone always made fun of his silly floppy hair, which I love the Bagley art of it, but that was always the one thing you had a hard time justifying. But here, Peter Parker makes a surprise last page appearance, and he's got his old long hair, but it looks like normal person long hair, which I was like, oh, that's how he's supposed to look. Right. That's what long hair
David
looks
Marquez
like.
Makes sense of everything.
So this was really good.
It is really good, and it catches people up to speed. Who is this Miles Morales kid? And you pick up on, he doesn't have the Uncle Ben situation, but he does have another similar dire situation where his father hates him because he thinks that he's responsible for his mother's death, and maybe he is.
I like that the central conflict of this issue was that he's been dating Kate Bishop, who in another world is Hawkeye, the younger, and... he wants to tell her all his secrets because he's a teenager, and that's what they want to do. And he's not sure if he should reveal his identity. His best friend says, no, that's crazy, which it is, obviously. And then he goes to Mary Jane for advice because he wants to know how Peter handled it with her. And I thought that was a great scene between the two of them. And I love that that was sort of the central conflict.
That's my favorite dynamic of this book and what makes it so interesting. In addition to him being an interesting character with a great cast of characters, but there is a precedent for everything that he does.
Mm-hmm.
So there is – unlike Peter, he has someone to look at. He has like a blueprint and to say, well, was this a good idea or was this a bad idea? And a continuation of that. It looks like – well, it doesn't just look like it. It's happening. The Green Goblin – Norman Osborn is out and about.
He's escaped. Where did his beard go?
Oh, when he transforms?
Yeah.
That he would
we have
look
a new
cool
mystery, Josh.
So it's like the Red Hulk situation.
Turn into the Green Goblin, no beard.
Did they shave it?
I don't know. He turned into the Green Goblin.
Well, he's in the prison and he's got the beard.
Burned off.
Prison beard. Well, that could be.
He says everybody.
The thing is, the real question is, that's an easy one. If we come back and he has reverted back to Osborn,
beard.
And the beard's there, then we got a whole thing.
A whole
then,
crusade.
It's transformation back, and whether or not they have their clothes, that's always the big question, the clothes or the beard.
That's a jacket-level issue.
It is.
So I think my advice for Miles is to not sneak up on teenage girls in a dark alley who are by themselves.
Who have a history of supervillains.
Right. Just not – don't drop in right above –
I mean, just in – in general, it's a bad news.
I don't know if that's just like Bendis commentary on Spider-Man, the upside down kiss. And like, wouldn't that be really creepy if you came up to somebody from upside down?
I think it's still really creepy even if it's someone you are dating.
Yeah.
Because you're in the middle of a dark alley by yourself and suddenly a head appears in front of you.
Yeah.
But I thought this was great. And obviously, as spoiled earlier, the final page reveal is that Peter Parker is rooting around in Miles Morales' apartment. Is what is happening here? Is it a clone?
Well, there are two Spider-Men that appear that are involved in a heist.
Right.
And so maybe it's clone stuff. They've done clone stuff in the Ultimate Universe before.
And Spider-Woman is a clone. Right. So
I don't know. So I'm not
probably what it is.
So I'm not going to be too alarmist about, oh, no, they brought Peter back, because I'm sure that's not what they're doing. They're doing something else there, but it remains to be seen.
If they brought also Peter back, they would be much more of a hoopla.
Well, yeah. You know, it's interesting that this was kept.
Right.
as well as it was, because I really didn't expect that coming. And I did see in the how come his hair is back? Anyway, really, why is his hair back? No, but what I was going to say is that it. I know this is a new number one. They've started over. But I really liked that it was actually relatively low key. It was like a relationship Spider-Man kind of issue. Character it wasn't. Piece. I mean, you have in the background the offing of Norman Osborn, but that's very much in keeping with if you want to look at the first issues of you know Ultimate Spider-Man in general. Like it was very slow burn kind of thing, and I think that takes it to what you know what it was at heart, which is good. And it's I was going to say, it's a heck of an emotional component that they have built in for Miles Morales with his father and mother. I really like that conflict. It has a tone similar to Peter Parker's, but it is a totally different thing.
He has to sneak into his own apartment to get clean underwear because he's afraid that his dad might be there.
It's rough.
That's heavy stuff.
I like the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who basically was like, I'm out. You handle What, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s been shut down again? I'm out.
That guy's sick of bureaucracy.
Yeah, and Norman Osborn telling him he's going to burn all the time. But I thought this was great. I really did. This is, you know, we didn't love the other Ultimate books that Bendis didn't write that they've been rebooting, but this Bendis continues to roll on this Ultimate Spider-Man world. And it's really sort of unprecedented.
It would feel really weird if he wasn't doing this.
They'd have to do something different with the Ultimate line or end it, I think. That's what I think, if he stopped writing Spider-Man. That's just my opinion. So this week we had two major launches from Marvel and DC. We had an event starting at Marvel and a new sort of event, but another weekly book starting in New 52 : Futures End number one, which is, I don't know if it's an event or not. I don't know how DC is classifying it, but it's a weekly book with Brian Azzarello and Jeff Lemire and Keith Giffen writing it and a bunch of people drawing it. And
it's a really odd mix of creators there.
Yeah. Did you read it?
I'll do it.
I did.
Okay, Ryan, thanks.
I did. It's very, you know, and the zero issue of this was their
I didn't read the zero issue
offering. And, you know, it's pretty much more of the same. But it's it just feels very DC Age of Ultron. Very soon after Marvel's Age of Ultron.
Right.
You get this brother eye thing, and it's both of them are reminiscent of, you know, the Terminator setup, and that's fine and that can be fun. But this also feels a lot like cleaning house. They're killing off a bunch.
I couldn't tell what they were doing with it, to be honest with you. They did ostensibly kill the Stormwatch, but that also included Hawkman. I have a hard time believing they killed Hawkman.
Yeah. That might be a situation where it's like, well, we're leaving our options open.
Right.
You know, we're not definitively saying that they're dead, but there is an excuse for them not to have a book right now.
For a first issue, it didn't really do much to really tell you what it was you were reading. I get that's also sometimes a technique to drop you in the action, and you've got to figure out what's going on. I mean, there's Batman Beyond, and there's Grifter murdering a bunch of young kids, and then there's Firestorm being a dick to each other because there's two kids who are Firestorm, and it wasn't bad. I just didn't know what I was.
I gotta be honest. Every time I read a Firestorm comic in the new 52 continuity, and I haven't read it steadily, it feels like the same story every time.
Yes,
like they're in the same place treading water. We have a bad relationship, and it's not. It's like. It's that sitcom progression where you learn a lesson at the end of the episode, but then by the time the next one rolls around, you haven't learned anything.
I feel like that's indicative of the general editorial formula that they have decided on and stuck with, like Grim Death.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like Terry McGinnis. I like the whole Batman Beyond setup. Although I kind of feel like I wish he was just off in his own little corner, unaffected by the new 52. He's sent backwards into still the future. It's like 35 years from now or something, and then he gets sent back instead of Bruce. But since the weight is different, he doesn't go back.
You can't return.
Right.
He can't use the same device to return home.
But he doesn't go back as far in the past as he was supposed to.
Right. Josh, the headline of this one, though, is that the final page reveal is Green Arrow dead after being impaled by not one, but many rebars.
We should have posted a rebar warning.
Not just one. It's a lot. A lot of rebars. Paul, this says, maybe I'm crazy, but the first page says 5 years from now.
Yeah. They're jumping ahead. Five? Huh?
It's only 5 years? Seems like it's much longer in the future.
But then also remember that all the other ones started with 5 years ago.
Well, it's five years for the Turi jump back. He's jumping back from 30 or 35 years in the future.
Right.
But he ends up, instead of now, he ends up jumping not as...
5 years from now.
5 years from now. So it is a jump ahead, but there's still a further future.
There's some douche with Google Glass recording him. So we know it's the future.
Yeah.
So Original Sin is the first issue of the Marvel event, written by Jason Aaron, drawn by Mark Diodato. We talked about the Zero issue last week.
It was a little longer.
Or previously.
That was unrelated. That was Mark Waid and...
Well, not completely unrelated. Well, it was a character piece about the Watcher, which makes you ostensibly care about him because in this issue he's murdered, shot in the head, and his head just blows up everywhere. And it's a big head, so there's a lot of blood.
They pull his eyes out.
Yeah, and they cut his eyes out. But Paul, Josh, you didn't read this, did you?
I looked at it and I started to, and I got the same thing. I tried to read the other one. I don't care about
it. Here's why you needed to read this. Okay? Old Nick Fury, or real Nick Fury, as I like to call him. In a diner.
So I'm the racist.
Yes. Telling stories about Bastogne 1944.
All right.
It's for one scene. Read it for that one scene.
Just
really.
Read the scene, and that's all you need to do.
It's Nick Fury, Black Widow,
Wolverine, and Captain America.
Wolverine, and Captain America. And
talking
his
about
diner.
The best steak they ever had. He says the best steak he ever had was at Bastogne.
All right.
And I like that every once in a while they play really fast and loose with just how Russian is Black Widow.
Right.
You know, and in this one, she's full on Russian because she's like, the only good steak is from bear. And Wolverine's like, nah, it was this steak. And they're like, no, it was this cow that wandered into Bastogne and got blown up by the Nazis. And then we pulled a Jeep apart and turned it into an oven and cooked up some steak. And she's like, it would be better if it were bear.
Well, have you had a bear steak, Paul? You don't know. Maybe it is.
I don't know, but. I just love
it. Just read that one scene, Josh. That's all you have to do.
And so it's going to be this big sprawling mystery. And you know, Nick Fury's got his shield. They're big on these cars.
Nick Fury is not in charge of shield, but he is in charge of the murder investigation. So he's like the primary on this case. And one thing I actually did kind of like about this was in the great Marvel tradition, they sort of break up the investigation into these groups of heroes that would never, ever hang out.
Yeah,
which was always fun in the 90s, and this would happen a lot, like the great Marvel Avengers annual, in which they all faced off against their dead friends. I forgot what number that was, but like you had Ant-Man and Emma Frost and Punisher and Doctor Strange and it's fun pairings of characters that wouldn't go together, and Jason Aaron's writing them, so as ridiculous as the story might be, the character stuff is really good.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
So I'm actually going to read another one. I wasn't necessarily going to. I was just going to check out the first issue, but I did really like the groupings. It's sort of silly. I mean, what's happening? I don't necessarily care, but I do like reading the characters as written by Jason Aaron.
Mm.
So we'll see.
That's a good reason.
And the whole big thing, and we sort of haven't gotten to this point yet, but like everybody's secrets are coming out.
We're going to come out. And I'm not going to read the tie-ins, so I'm just going to see how it does just reading the regular series.
Mm.
I like that Doctor Strange sent the Punisher to another dimension to fuck with him.
Yeah.
So that was Original Sin number one.
Swamp Thing number 31. Josh, how did you feel about this one?
I like this book, and I realize that I like sort of this storyline they've been doing lately. I think it's really interesting. I thought there were I like the twist on is the girl's name Mickey or whatever.
Mickey, right, yeah.
I like the twist on the sexy lady, and you thought, oh, they're gonna have plant happy fun time sex, but instead, you know, there's a whole other thing going on. It sort of flipped all that on its head. And then I liked very much that I don't know, every time somebody uncovers, I know it's their job. Hey, what if there's a gray? You know, that's the mold. And I thought, oh, that's cool. And
yeah, so there's the green and the red, and now there's the gray. And yeah, the design of that is really cool. And we should say
it's less irritating within the ring core.
It is. So, I was thinking about that, and that's what I was curious about, because I liked this, but then I was like, but wait a minute, this is sort of indicative of the problems we've had with a lot of other, like...
Well, that was overdone.
Green Lantern and then Green Arrow introduced
really liked
that
it
whole
at
thing.
First in Green Lantern. Yeah. Green Lantern is a special case because that was the first instance, at least of this nature, and we really liked it. I mean, if you go back, we were in love with that whole ring thing, the whole different ring core.
Sure.
They just drove it into the ground, and then they dug deeper and drove it further into the ground.
But
I think they're still
the
digging.
I really like Alec Holland. I like watching him try to figure all this out. This is one of the best things to come out of. This is actual interesting character stuff that came out of the 52, where before there was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Where they really sort of dug up a character who's really interesting, and he's reluctantly accepted things, as opposed to Superman, who has, you know, who takes it all on, or Batman, who isn't happy about any of it, but it's his job, is, you know, that Punisher sort of thing. Like Alec Holland, I like his stance. It's like
he's in the situation. He didn't ask to be.
But he's got
no choice, really.
Here, let me put it this way. It's not unlike being a parent. there's not a lot of fun to it a lot of times, but somebody has to do it. You're responsible for it. That's the thing. You know, I mean, that's greatly simplifying. But as I look at it.
No, but it's correct. He's been made the protector of the green. Yeah. He didn't choose to be the – it's like he didn't swear an oath to be the protector of the green. He didn't decide to be the protector of the green. He just – woke up one day after having been blown up, and then he was the protector of the green, and there's nothing else he can do about it.
Right, and
he can't ignore it.
Yeah,
go on with his life. He's the fucking Swamp Thing, so he's got to go. He's got
to
be.
But and he's
green.
Doing it because
yeah,
because
like
it's
that,
the right
actually.
Thing, and it's very to me that's very heroic. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's got a very blue collar heroic and a very sort of unique character amongst all of this other stuff that's going on.
And so
now,
so it's a classic story because then you have this other. Avatar in this time it's for the gray for fungus and mold who has gone about it a very different way she and sometimes he as we find out ends up sort of giving up that life and then there's just this decaying you know mold body in the basement but she takes over countless bodies
her avatar body to go live human life. Well, also killing humans in the process, but...
And she says she's forgotten how many, you know, host bodies she's taken over the years.
This is really good, and the art was fantastic.
It was. Now, my point, the actual reason that I wanted to add this to the list was that at the end of it, Aquaman shows up.
Yes.
Yeah!
Well...
Hero of the Seas. Seven
you know,
Seas.
This is
from Maine.
One of these, and I like that Jeff Parker's writing it. That's totally fine. But one of the things that I realized was good about this book is that it didn't feel like it was part of the trudging sameness that is the rest of the new 52.
Well, they've had a lot of regular crossovers with heroes in this book.
I know. But I feel like, especially since Soul took over, like he's been able to tell his story for a little bit.
I mean, Constantine's been in there.
Yeah, but
Superman,
Scarecrow. No. They
Animal
can
Man.
Show up. This is a crossover. This is trying to bring in. Let's make people who are interested in this.
Okay,
it's a little more heavy-handed than that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he
but
came
they
in
the super
from
long Animal Man crossover that went for like a year.
I didn't like that, but that was before.
Yeah, he's saying since Soul took over.
Since Soul.
Yeah.
Like it for a while, I felt like he's been able to just tell this story that he's telling, and I've really enjoyed it because it doesn't come out every week and a half. It's a monthly issue of a thing that is ongoing and progressing, and all of a sudden Aquaman shows up.
I gotta say, I'm looking forward to Soul's Aquaman. I'll be honest with you.
I mean, he
has so far shown an ability to write all these characters really well.
Yeah, but the next issue takes place in Aquaman. It's not gonna be him writing. You know,
no, but that's Jeff Parker.
I know.
You're saying you hate Jeff Parker?
I'm not, but I wish there'd
be a
better
artist on that
book.
You have a problem with people from the South?
Whoa! Only if they're racist.
We're just pushing each other in front of the bus constantly. This episode.
436 episodes before we start to take each other out.
Yeah.
Well, I thought this is really good. And it's funny because I see it on my list every week, every month, and I go, do I want to keep reading that? And then I read it, and I go, yes.
What? You know.
It's really good.
There's really something to be said. You know, Swamp Thing is sort of famously the book that takes people out. I mean, like it's like all sorts of people have tried and failed to start a Swamp, like big names, Brian Vaughn, Mark Miller, you know, have tried to start up a Swamp Thing series and just failed at it. And they've actually, like, if you want to talk about one of the sort of success stories out of the New 52, is that this one actually, I don't know what the sales are like, but it's good. It's been good. Consistently good, and they managed a change, and I think Soul's, you know, he's done probably a more enjoyable job at it than Scott did, and I think Scott had a good start.
Yeah.
So
now, if you're a Swamp Thing fan and you've only ever read this series, I could not recommend more the original Alan Moore, and I say original like it was the first, but the old Alan Moore run, mm-hmm. which made Swamp Thing famous, and you can find all that on Amazon. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Collections of it, gives you the full complete run, and it really is all that it is cracked up to be, all that it was, you know, built up to be. I hadn't read it until I read the collections, and you can get all those at Amazon at fmi.com/Amazon. Like, going there and making all your purchases, we get a little piece of the action, keeps the show going, keeps the site running, keeps us in new microphones and all that kind of fun stuff. Also hookers and cocaine, but we don't like to talk about that.
Yes, we do.
fmi.com/Amazon, that's how you can help.
I don't know anything about it, so let's talk about it. It sounds fascinating. Do you pay them at the beginning, or
really depends? So, you know, once you start being a repeat customer, they give you a little bit more leeway on when you have to pay. fmi.com/registration.
Sorry,
is where you can go to help us directly by becoming an iFanboy member at $3 a month, $30 a year, or by donating any amount you want. That helps us, goes directly to us, and we can help keep things rolling, pays for the server bills, all that kind of stuff. And we thank everyone who does that very much.
So Moon Knight number 3 firmly establishes that Patrick Swayze's ghost is part of the DC universe. The Marvel universe, right. They share a mythology in that when ghosts are angry, they can punch people.
That's true. I really found Moon Knight's new costume interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of fun that it's sort of like this Inspector Gadget thing going on. Like, each issue he gets a new kind of costume. Or set of abilities.
I still don't really care about the story, but I still really enjoy looking at it.
There's this kind of arc mythology going on, and we've just have the first 3 issues. And so there's this thing going on where he goes back to his place and he talks to, you know, the whole Moon Knight spirit, the Egyptian spirit, I guess. And that's kind of a through line. But otherwise, these are sort of like these little comic book haiku.
It's like
these really little, you know, story, like little short stories.
He did something similar when Warren
Secret
Ellis did
Avengers,
something similar. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking of that. When he did Hellblazer, he did something similar.
Mm.
And he did what was the book with Snowtown?
Fell.
Fell. It feels like that. Like, you just have this little this was a weird little story, like the arc mm-hmm. of it. It wasn't even completely clear to me. But
yeah, I didn't entirely understand.
They're like these little comic book tone poems. Mm-hmm. And
just visually, it's super impressive.
Yeah, I've really come around to the last time I was like, I'm not sure if I'm into the story, and I'm still not. I don't care. This is a vehicle to watch Declan Shalvey and Jordi Belair do. Must be the work of their careers so far.
Yeah, and I think that's what's great about it is that the stories might not always work, but he comes up with interesting ideas for them to draw and color.
Yeah.
And
sequences to illustrate, you know, and, mm-hmm. and just like
I love the glider.
Oh, and there's one shot of that in all the issues so far that are just like it's such a cool visual tool, I guess. I mean, like, the thing is, I've been a fan. I've been a supporter of Shalvey's work for a really long time, and it's so cool to watch him come into his own. You're like, wow, he's really like stepping up to the plate. I hate baseball metaphors.
No, it's such a calling card. It's mm-hmm. it really makes a statement with each issue. And you know, even if we're not entirely latched onto the overarching story, each issue affords him, you know, these great sequences and, you know, new costumes, because that's another skill that he has. He's really great mm-hmm. at doing superhero costume designs. He did this one in the new, like the latest Boomerang costume. That's Declan. And so he gets to do a different look for Moon Knight each issue. And it's sort of annoying seeing people like, oh, I hate the new Moon Knight design. Well, it's supposed to change every issue.
Yeah, wait around.
You know, so it's they're
like the weather
fun.
In Ithaca. Am I right, Connor?
Yeah.
Boom.
Paul, earlier this week on the Son of Batman podcast, we mentioned how we talked about how Tim Drake has been sort of marginalized in the DC universe and how there's nothing for him to do anymore. And so lo and behold, I opened up Batman Eternal 5 and it's a Tim Drake issue.
Oh, is it? I missed this. Okay.
This was awesome.
Is it 4 or 5?
5. This was the best one so by far. And I, this was the first one where I was like, I might actually really enjoy this series if they're more like this. This was a Tim Drake issue where he is investigating these sick kids. It also heavily features Vicki Vale and some awesome angry rants about the state of journalism. And then it also features Harper Row stepping out into her superhero persona for the first time. And so it's pretty great collection of characters and great art by Andy Clark.
Oh, I like Andy Clark.
Yeah.
What did he just do? He did something recently that I liked a lot, I feel like. I don't remember what.
He did backup stories.
Yeah.
And it was in Detective or one of those books, but that probably wasn't what you're thinking of.
When I always said recently, now it's going to be like 8 years ago. Did he do Batman and Robin?
Yes, he did a couple issues of Batman and Robin.
In between, quite late.
I know from Rebels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But Paul, this is right up your alley. This one.
Okay.
This is Tim Drake.
I tapped out at the wrong moment.
Tim Drake investigating on his own, runs into Batman. They have a little, not confrontation, but a little tete-a-tete. And then Vicki Vale is investigating on her own, the same story. And then Harper Row shows up, not quite in her, was it Blue Bat? What's her character name?
Bluebird.
Not quite there yet, but she's in her little pre-superhero outfit, you know, the black leather with all of her utility belt stage they all go through.
That's a fun special time in every superhero's life.
Right.
Just figuring things out.
She's figuring out her identity, you know, a place in the world. And right now it's black leather with a utility belt and a taser.
Who doesn't know that experience?
So this was really good. Batman and Superman 10, also really good. Jeff Lemire stepping in to write an issue with Carl Kerschel on half of the art. And Carl Kerschel is wonderful. He did the Flash story and then Wednesday Comics way back then.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a one-shot team up with Superman and the Atom, who is not yet the Atom, although by the end of the issue he becomes the Atom, having to fight miniaturized aliens that are inside Batman's body.
It's Fantastic Voyage in Batman.
Yes, this was great.
It was fun. It was fun and refreshing, and it felt like
it's
it could
be a nice little
one shot. Sort of the barometer for me is whenever you have a superhero crossover, if it feels like it could be a Justice League Unlimited episode, then I'm probably going to like it. And so this was a good time.
I loved it. I love that. I just love them inside the body. I loved the little joke that the Atom played on Superman saying that the device had been broken and he had to stay in the body forever.
Yeah.
Superman's reaction to that.
I thought I thought that this was actually one of the other issues that you know, however many years later, did fulfill the promise of the New 52 a little bit with the Atom. I was like, oh, I feel like I'm getting introduced to a new version of this character in keeping with the old one.
That's what this should have been like from the beginning.
Yep. And I thought it was really good and really interesting because I didn't, you know, he was a different guy. I had to
well,
meet
they're,
him.
They're pulling a bit of this. This is from the Frankenstein Agent of Shade series.
Yeah.
So it takes you way back to the beginning of the New 52.
You know, and that's on me a little. not being on top of that, I guess. But I was.
No, but
I was,
still, it's still an introduction to the character in an interesting way. A character still recognizable as himself, but new and different, but still the Atom.
What's it like when he meets this guy? What's it look like? You know, what's he acting like? It was good. I didn't expect to enjoy this when I started it, and I did.
I like Batman being like, what are you doing inside me? Why are you doing that? Don't do that. Ask, please.
Good, real good.
Yeah. I know that I had mentioned Alex and Ada previously.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is sort of a classic robot AI story. And we're up to issue 6 now. The basic story is that this guy, his grandmother buys him this super expensive AI robot and it freaks him out. So he goes to this sort of black market underground thing and he activates her AI basically so that she becomes a sentient being. And everything that goes along with that.
Why does she purchase a robot for him?
Because he's lonely and he just broke up with a girl or something like that.
Buys him a sex robot or?
It's not a sex robot, although
it's a full service protocol droid.
Yeah, I mean the implication is that that's a possibility. I guess, but he's kind of freaked out by it and he didn't really want
to. Is it metal parts or is it like a
no, it looks like a human.
Synthetic outer edge.
Yeah, yeah, she's a pretty girl.
All right.
And it just tonally, this issue was really nice. It just basically
this is sort of her first day, and she's touching everything and seeing what things feel yeah, like, and no,
touching everything.
No, like what the fabric of the couch.
If there is a
like,
juvenile joke to be made, Josh.
I know. I'm gonna push through this, but it was a really low key, really nicely paced issue, and it's the kind of thing that you don't see as much in like the more mainstream comics. But he gets to really take his time and tell his own story with this, and it's been a good series. I look forward to seeing these issues when they come up.
It's a very manga idea.
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely a bit of that to it, but it's like almost with a touch of sort of American indie comic ennui to it. Like there's that all at the same time. So it's good.
Paul, when I started reading Cyclops number one from Greg Rucka and Russell Dauterman, at first I was like, why does this book exist? Why is really? Cyclops not with the other X-Men? I liked that. Why do we have to do this? But then by the end of it, I was like, I don't care why. It's awesome.
Yeah, because there's plenty of all new X-Men left, you know, down on Earth to get into crazy adventures, as we saw in All New X-Men. But this is a cool opportunity.
Yeah, no, by the end of it, I'm fully in. We talk about pirates in the beginning of this show. This is space pirates, even more so than sort of the Wake pirates. These guys are boarding ships and sacking them. And
I mean, when they board the Badoon ship and Corsair gives his speech, you know, saying then this lovely lady is Hepzibah, and this is my son who just put a sunroof in your vehicle, and if you don't want a pool, then, you know, step aside. And it's a grand swashbuckling stuff, and delivers on the promise of the Starjammers concept.
Yeah.
But let's do a cool Starjammers book. But then also, we had that question on a recent podcast asking, you know, what's a great book for, you know, a new dad? This is all about fathers and sons, and we're just getting to that place. So they board this Badoon ship and they commandeer a little like two person vessel, and Corsair decides this would be a good opportunity for me and Scott to go off and, you know, and bond for like a month or whatever. And they're going to reunite with Hepzibah and everybody else a little later on. And
was it his idea or was it the sexy skunk's idea?
They both have the idea.
Yeah.
I thought
could have just said squirrel, although I guess that's taken. So I guess we'll go with skunk.
Then it's like he calls it. Doesn't he call it like a skunk type thing?
Yeah.
Scott does. Yeah.
But I like that Cyclops has a sword now, and he's a pirate in space, and they pirate ships. I mean, I think this was super fun.
It is really fun. I'm excited for it. Like, it feels like it's a lot of setting the scene first, though. Like the promise at the end of the issue is sort of like what I was ready for, you know, with the announcement of this book. So I feel like it really will probably kick into gear in issue two.
Oh, really? Because I really liked the dynamic of this with the whole pirate crew.
Oh, I liked it too. I'm just saying, you know, I was, you know, I think this is, you know, establishing, this is the first 15 minutes of the movie.
And I like Russell Dauterman a lot. He's very kind of in the Dave Marquez school of art.
A perfect choice for this book in terms of just the whimsy and you know, he does these really cool nebulas in the background. Yeah. I mean, that first sequence when Cyclops is using his optic blasts to propel him space is a really cool idea. And but he's also really good. Yeah, I agree. I thought of Dave Marquez too, that it's really good for, you know, coming of age teen comic kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one to definitely check out.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. Go to ifanboy.com. In the comments section of this show, you can talk about these books, other books, whatever you want to talk about. Let's do that at ifanboy.com. And that's now going to jump on the book of the month. He's not lagging. He's actually
I was ready to do it last week.
Yeah.
Josh Lanigan with the May book of the month.
Now, this is difficult for me because the book of the month for this this month of May. Wow, that's a lot of M's. May Book of the Month is Maximum Minimum Wage by Bob Fingerman. You may have recognized that name from me talking about the issues that have been coming out. And I don't want to go over the same ground over and over, which is sort of what makes this difficult, but I think I can get around it. Maximum Minimum Wage is a collection of all of the issues and strips that made up the series Minimum Wage that ran in the late 90s, I think through the early 2000s. And these are the precursors to the current current series is going on in Image right now. So if you picked up that series that's going on in Image right now, you would have no problem reading it and you would be able to enjoy it if you enjoy that kind of thing, and it would be totally cool. However, if you like it and you want more and you want to see everything that came before it, you can go pick up this book. And what makes it special is that A, it has all that background stuff, but B, it's a big, lovely volume. It's oversized, and it's incredibly inclusive. It has all of the issues that were included in sort of the original run. And then on top of that, it even includes even earlier issues that were sort of working drafts for what became the series. So you read the story and then you read an earlier version of the story.
That's very cool.
And it's more interesting than you would think, basically. This has appeared in different places over the years. There's been different collections of it from different publishers under different names, but this is really sort of a big definitive one. And, you know, it tells a story about a certain kind of person and somebody who I think comic people will relate to, and a culture in the 90s in New York City. It's adult in the sense that sex is definitely a theme that's going on. There's sort of, you know, it's not for kids. But it really tackles a lot of the thoughts that, you know, people had in their early 20s. You know, the sort of, you're an adult, you're dealing with the world, you don't really know how, all sorts of stuff. And Rob is, you know, he's kind of endearing. He's kind of infuriating. You know, he's doubting himself. He's wondering things. It's a really personal kind of, you know, exploration of sort of that time of life. And it many times it feels very, you know, off the cuff. It feels very like he's just sort of doing it, you know, without really planning everything. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean like it feels very naturalistic as you go through it. It's got a certain voice to it that's like a little bit of, you got to remember at this time in the mid to late 90s, we were living in the Kevin Smith, Kevin Williamson era, right. Mm-hmm. Where everyone had snappy patter in their dialogue. And there is a lot of that in this, where the people won't say things directly. They'll try to say something clever all the time, which could get a little irritating, but it doesn't bother me so much. One of the things that's really fun about it, though, is that like it's a different New York City that's here. It's a little more crazy. It's a little more dirty. I mean, listen, all that stuff is still there. You know, but it deals with real stuff. There's basically, Rob is a cartoonist. He meets this girl. They start up a relationship. The whole time she's like, you know, you're going to be sorry. I'm crazy. You know, and I don't know a man who hasn't dated somebody who told him that and wasn't proven right in the end. And you know, like you watch their sort of relationship, come and go. If you read the new series, this is basically, he's been divorced. So you sort of know where this is going. Mm-hmm. I think it's super honest. There's all these sort of strange encounters with people in New York City, as they go through it. It's definitely got that feeling of not Manhattan cool, but like sort of, up and coming, not up and coming. So and or not poor, but just, you know, when you're in your early 20s, you don't have any money and you're living in the outer boroughs, you're in Queens, you're in, you know, like it feels like that. You know, if you go into a White Castle in Queens in 1998, he captured that really, really well, which I thought was cool. I thought that was it's a side of things you don't see as much. I don't know.
How many years has this been in a real world? Like, how many years did he do this?
I think I'm going to say 97.
97 years.
No. He started in 97, so 17 years. You know,
how's his progression of art in that time?
Yeah,
art's fairly similar. The art in the original issues is very similar to what's in the stuff that's coming out now. It looks almost the same. If you go back to sort of the earlier versions of stuff, it's much more liney. It's less textured.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of cool. It still all looks hand drawn. It's got a lot of, you know, Zipitone and textures and things like that done that way in the old style. It's all black and white, obviously. You know, the thing is this. I've been saying this when we read about the other issues. I couldn't put this down. Like, I kept reading it. You know, every chance I had for as many days as it took me to get through it. It's got one of those big ribbons in it so you can save your place, which helps.
Sweet.
And I was reading it every single chance I get. It's like you're being a voyeur and you're watching into this person's life as they go through it and watching, you know, what mistakes they've made, watching their private thoughts and watching them hang out with their friends. And, dealt with a lot of stuff. I thought it was really interesting and brave and funny and sexy. And it was just all of these things of comics that, like a kind of comic that was used to be very common and now is not. And I really enjoyed it. And I think this made me enjoy the current stuff even more because I have sort of it's like picking up a show at the start of the fifth season where you can totally pick it up and follow it, but then you go back and watch it for the beginning.
Sure. There's more resonance to what's happening.
Totally. Yeah. Great cartooning, really good character work. And that really, really brave personal kind of stuff to get. I don't know how autobiographical it is, but there has to be an element of it to this. And then in the back, there's all sorts of developmental material. There's all sorts of sketches and things like that. And there's all these pinups, just amazing pinups from folks like Dave Johnson, Jill Thompson, Mike Mignola, Kevin Nolan, Hernandez Brothers, Peter Baggy, Roger Langridge, my friend John Kirschbaum, Dean Haspiel, Ted McKeever, like great Guy Davis. Great, great stuff in here to look at. It's just a really nice package.
Very nice.
That's from Image Comics?
Yep, it's from Image, forward by Robert Kirkman. And he actually, his forward on this is fantastic. He really talks about how it was it was one of those first comics that he discovered that did something different that was sort of controversial that he would have maybe gotten in trouble for having in school, but it showed him a kind of the world that he didn't know about, and a thing that you could do with comics, he says it's not apparent, but he thinks there's a lot of minimum wage in The Walking Dead and Invincible. And I can see that. And I think that this kind of comic was important. And for, whatever the small number of people were who read it when it was coming out at the time, although that small number then is probably a huge number now.
Right.
I feel like it was pretty influential. And, you're talking to a guy, one of my favorite graphic novels of all time is Box Office Poison. And I see this as very much in that vein. It's a different tone slightly, but that era, that kind of story is what this is. And, that sounds good at all. This book is totally worth, the $35 cover price or something like that. But it's a great book.
So there you go. There is the May Book of the Month. Paul, you're on the hook now for the June Book of the Month.
Okay. Oh, God, is it over?
Yes, it's over.
Oh, gosh.
It's a lot to choose from. I've been reading some good stuff lately. So
start thinking.
Yeah.
While you're thinking, I'll read the audience question. This is from Wes, who writes and says, let's play a game. Say you could only buy one book from each publisher. Which book would it be? These would be monthlies, not limited series. The publisher breakdown is as follows. Please feel free to add if you have any. Okay, we're not going to add any. We're just going to use the list he's got. What we'll do here is, and this is me talking no longer, Wes, we're going to do this like a Rorschach test. So, or not a Rorschach test, but that, I'm going to say the publisher name. You say the first title that comes to your mind, all right? This is going to reveal something about your inner life and your inner feelings. Okay?
Okay.
So we'll go Josh and Paul, then I will say mine. So Marvel.
Thor, God of Thunder.
Oh.
Mother. Wait, different game. Thor, God of Thunder.
I will also say Thor. DC.
Right now?
Yes. No, in 1997.
Royals, Masters of War.
It's a good choice. Are we doing DC separate from Vertigo or?
No.
The Wick. Well, that's a limited series. Action Comics.
Batman. Image.
Minimum Wage.
Saga.
Saga also.
That's
Dark
tough.
Horse. Dark Horse.
BPRD, Hell on Earth. Whatever it is
Men
now.
Men and X-Men.
Book 3.
Hellboy.
Star Wars. IDW.
Whammy.
Pass.
I'm going to say Little Nemo upcoming.
Not reading anything currently from IDW. Boom.
Peanuts?
Six Gun Gorilla.
Ooh, that was good. Is that still
Pass.
Going on?
Valiant.
Quantum and Woody.
Quantum and Woody.
Pass. Dynamite.
Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon. Oni Press.
Letter 44.
The Bunker.
The Sixth Gun.
Hey!
Yay.
There you go. Our inner favorites have been revealed. Archie.
Archie.
Afterlife with Archie.
Afterlife with Archie.
Archie. Just Chuckhead.
It was like Mega Man. I don't know.
So there you go, Wes. Those are the books we would choose if we could only choose one. Interesting. Interesting spread. Image is the hardest one.
Yeah, it is.
The Marvel's pretty hard, but Image was the hardest one. I almost said Sex.
Image was, I mean, you could. I could have thought Alex and Ada or Saga was a really good choice. I've really been enjoying Revival. I've been,
yeah.
I missed so many books. I can't, you know what's funny?
Lazarus.
Yeah. Ooh. Hmm. Yeah. See, I can't. That is really hard. And see, what's funny is that Marvel has been very good. But as soon as I said Thor, I couldn't remember any other. Totally, if you were to say, you know, what book do you not want to disappear? Yeah.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Panel Syndicate.
The one book they have?
Private Eye.
Private Eye.
I feel like we could get extra Image and Marvel and DC books if we, you know, opted out from a Boom or an IDW.
Right.
Because you passed on a bunch of those.
Well, I don't read it. I can't disingenuously choose a book. I don't read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to keep it real.
IDW is just Transformers and Turtles and G.I. Joe at this point, right?
They do really well. They're like 4%.
I like that you chose Flash Gordon even though you didn't like it.
The only one I'm reading for Dynamite. He wins by default.
I read that one.
I read it. Did two ever come out?
Not yet.
Well, there you go.
I think it's next week.
You can email us at comic.fanboy.com if you have any more parlor games you want us to play, like you're Dancing Monkeys. That's what we do. We're Dancing Monkeys for your amusement. So email us at contact@fanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697. If you do that, tell us who you are and tell us where you're from. Keep it around 30 seconds. But that was fun. I enjoyed.
I don't know why I said mother for that one. That was.
Mother! Kill! So let's talk. We got a lot of shows this week. In fact, we last 2 weeks we put. Actually, I was looking. We put out 3 shows in about 4 days last week. We had the Amazing Spider-Man 2 podcast in which me and Paul and Timmy Wood talked about Amazing Spider-Man 2 and had 3 completely different opinions on the movie.
That was fun. That was a good one.
Then we had the Son of Batman podcast in which the animation brain trust of me and Paul and Ryan Haupt talked about the latest DC Universe animated original movie. We are all of one opinion on it until the very end in a strange twist that none of us saw coming.
Ryan said, yeah, it was good.
And then, so that came out a few days after the pod. There was 3 last week is what I'm saying. There was a regular show, there was Spider-Man, there was Son of Batman, there was a lot of podcasts. So if you missed any of those shows, they're all back there on the feed for you to find. Or they're on ifanboy.com, they're streaming. I was about to say streaming live, but we don't, that would be hard. They're streaming for your amusement on ifanboy and iTunes, all the places you get podcasts. And we have 2 coming up, Paul.
We have the final Akira episode is coming up. Now that all the movies are sort of straightened out. And then X-Men Days of Future Past, we'll be looking at that towards the end of the month.
A lot of podcasting. Head over to fanboy.com. That's where you'll find all these shows. And that's where you find the comments section on these shows. Talk about them. If you saw Spider-Man, you wanted to give us your thoughts. If you saw Son of Batman, you wanted to give us your thoughts. If you're going to see X-Men, that's where you can find that discussion. If you still want to talk about Captain America, it's still there on the main page. Lots of talk about that going on still. And that's where you can also find talk about each week's show and each week's batch of books. So find all that other at ifanboy.com.
And you can follow the action on twitter.com/ifanboy and, of course, facebook.com/ifanboy to find out what the pick of the week is before the show. And you can follow us all individually. Of course, Jim is at Jim Viscardi on Twitter. Connor is C.S. Kilpatrick. Josh is J.A. Flanagan. And I am Fuzzy Typewriter.
You know, if we could just adjust that at some point. That would be awesome, because I'm on the show regularly, have been since 2005, but you know, whatever. But if you like us, write a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends, your mom, or something. I'm just reading what's on here. I don't care anymore, because no one seems to care about me.
I'll spread the iFanboy, quote-unquote, love.
Anyway, our iTunes ratings, wow, ratings, are up to ratings. 998.
2 more, baby!
2 more.
And then Josh promised he'd quit. So you know, we're all looking forward to that moment. So
I iTunes reviews, though, that's a heck of a jump. We're up to 708. That's pretty good.
Actually, I believe Josh said he'd quit at 1,000 reviews. So you still got 300 to go until you boot him. And I know many of you out there would like to hear that. So
there's at least one guy.
So go over to iTunes, leave a review, get it up to 1,000. Josh will indeed quit the show if that happens. And so there you go. Guys,
this,
I feel like...
Paul, is this what you felt like at the beginning when we were calling you a racist?
It's a little bit like that.
Okay.
Is there some sort of medal they give out for people who podcast with a burnt mouth from lunch? Is that do they do that? I feel like I'm the real hero.
You're asking, do they give idiots prizes?
Yes. Yes.
It's called a Darwin Award, I believe.
People who eat their food way too fast out of the oven? No? No prize for that? And the thing is, once you burn it, right away, it's like so fresh and hot, hurts, but you've got the food in your mouth and you want to eat it because you're hungry. It just makes it worse. Just worse.
My older son, because the other one is inert, basically, he will take no chances on warm things. He wants that thing. Here, it's fine now. No, I'm going to wait 30, 40 minutes to just stare at that.
Did he have a bad episode? Did he burn himself?
I guess. You know what? Once there was, I took him to get pizza once and there was a scream. Like, I take a bite. Ah! Sorry. But I'm that dad.
Sorry.
Every dad has been that dad at one time where you're just in the middle of somewhere with this screaming child and you're like, I don't know. I didn't hit him. I don't know what that, I don't know how to do this.
I'm really looking forward to Ollie's autobiographical comics.
Yeah.
All right. Until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I don't do dad stories a lot on here, do I?
Yeah, but that was a good one.
All right.